This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
AI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
There is mean things happening in this land. There is mean things happening in this land. But the union's going on, and the union's growing strong. There is mean things happening in this land. On the 18th day of May, the union called a strike. But planners and their bosses throw the people out of their shack. There is mean things happening in this land. There is mean things happening in this land. But the union's going on, and the union's strong. There is mean things happening in this land.
Let's see. I'm getting a little bit confused with the songs I was trying to play here. You know, I think that some of my trusty music suppliers have got the numbers on the disc a little bit mixed up. Unless I've got the wrong disc in here. That's what's the problem. I've got the wrong disc in here. Okay. Not their fault. My fault. Actually, here, this is what I wanted to play. Okay, one moment. Okay, less than a smooth opening here, but hey, that's what you get for a WBAI, right? See to your pants radio. Here it is. Here, let's take that from the top.
I built a railroad and I made it run. I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad and now it's done. Say, brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, of bricks and rivets and lime. Once I built a tower, and now it's done. Say, buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell. Full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Say, brother, can you spare a dime?
Yeah, that classic of the Depression era, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, as reinterpreted recently, appropriately enough, by the Jim Queskin Jug Band with Samoa Wilson. Not quite sure where they're from. Somewhere out there in America. And before that, we actually heard something which was recorded for the Library of Congress back in the 1930s. By a fellow by the name of John L. Hancox, appropriately entitled, There Is Mean Things Happening in This Land. And indeed, there are. Well, the musical theme for this show is obviously, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Right? So, here it is, how many years later? 70 years later, and we appear to be back in the spare-a-dime paradigm, if you will. And this, of course, is a listener-supported, non-commercial, Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime? WBAI Radio here in New York City. My name is Bill Weinberg. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. We're going to be taking the Wayback Machine to the Depression era tonight, musically speaking, and also to some more recent historical analogies to the present juncture. A big shout out right from the top to the people who supplied the music, two of our fellow travelers here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Mitch Ritter of Lay Low Studios out in Beaverton, Oregon, and Carl Holtberg of the Rudy Blesch Ragtime Society up in Danbury, New Hampshire. Thanks, Mitch and Carl, as always, for supplying some of the a lot of the music, particularly in the realm of Americana that we've been delving into recently here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And you know what? Before we I've got a couple of announcements which I'm going to lead off with and sort of use as a springboard for the discussion tonight. But before I get to the announcements, I'm going to play one more song here. Believe it or not, we're actually taking the Wayback Machine to 1932 with one of the great singer-songwriters of the day, a guy by the name of Bob Miller, doing a little tune entitled Bank Failures. I mean, it's hard to believe this was recorded back in 1932. This was a commercial release, not for the Library of Congress, and the production quality is much higher, perhaps consequently. So it's the production quality is pretty good. Stylistically, it even sounds almost contemporary, with kind of a bluesy slide guitar thing going on. And of course, I mean, thematically, it couldn't be more au courant. So with that, let's take the Wayback Machine to 1932 with Bob Miller and his smash hit, Bank Failures, his topical smash hit, 1932 Bank Failures.
We pay taxes for good roads, pay taxes on our schools, taxes for this, taxes for that. Been working harder than mules. By skipping, we saved a few dollars, put them in a big bank vault. Something is wrong, cause that money is gone, and it certainly isn't our fault. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a bloat upset. Just why our money went bye-bye, nobody seems to explain. Times are hard, ain't it a shame? We gotta pay those taxes again. Our clothes are slouchy and ragged, our hearts are burdened with care. The failure of the national banks is nearly more than we can bear. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. But people, we're a bloat upset. For us people, why then allow them to run? Big iron balls can't open themselves. Folks, something's gotta be done. Our hard-earned money's gone bye-bye, gone in that big bank crash. We're in a mess, folks, a terrible mess. Can't get credit and we ain't got cash. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a bloat upset. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the use of working if we stay in debt? We gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a bloat upset.
Could have been recorded yesterday. And, okay, you know what we're going to do? Let's hear one more from that populist crooner of 1932, Bob Miller. Here, this is another one on a similar theme.
There's just two kinds of people, the sinner and the saint.
There's one that gets and always got, while the other poor one ain't. Oh, the rich man drives his Lincoln past the red light with a grin, and the poor man follows right behind in his little hunk of tin. There's a motorcycle copper following up on that trail. Oh, the rich man tears his ticket, but the poor man goes to jail. Oh, the rich man takes the high road anywhere that he may go, but when the poor man's traveling, he must always take the low. So if you're rich, you'll travel snug as peas are in the pod. Oh, the rich man rides the cushion, and the poor man rides the rod. Oh, the rich man, when he's ailing, stays at home and calls the doc. But the poor man has to go to work, be in time to punch a clock. The rich man takes his medicine, has his doctors and his nurse. So the rich man, he gets better, but the poor man, he gets worse. While the poor man steals a loaf of bread or a penny's worth of rolls, they take them to the courthouse. One is laughing, one's in tears. Oh, the rich man gets an apology, while the poor man gets 10 years. Oh, the rich man gets a lawyer, and the lawyer pleads his case, while the poor man asks for sympathy, but of that there is no trace. So if you're rich, don't worry, but the poor must give up hope. Oh, the rich man gets acquitted, while the poor man gets the rope. Oh, the rich man, when he kicks off, has a casket made of gold, while the poor man has a wooden box, and his grave looks mighty cold. The rich man gets a sermon, but here's one thing that's sure. When the rich man takes that long last ride, he's as much dead as the poor.
There you go. Could have been recorded yesterday, yeah? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Way back to 1932 with Bob Miller doing his two hit songs of that year. Back to back, we just heard The Rich Man and the Poor Man, and before that, Bank Failures. I like the way they didn't engage in any obfuscation or metaphor with the song titles back then. Very, very straightforward. Okay, so with that, why don't we jump right into it for a little bit here, shall we? Well, let's get the announcements out of the way for starters, because I can sort of use the announcements as a springboard for the discussion. There is going to be a discussion. If I can get all my ranting done within the next 40 minutes, we'll save the last half hour for phone calls at 212-209-2900. Write down the number, 212-209-2900. Got that pencil sharpened? One more time. That's 212-209-2900. Okay. Apropos of the musical theme for tonight's show, there is going to be 1 week from tonight, Tuesday, April 14th, a panel entitled What Lies Behind Causes and Consequences of the World Economic Crisis, featuring three speakers, including our good friend Andrew Kleiman, who we've had on these airways before. He's going to be speaking on the theme of roots of the crisis and proposed solutions. And he is a Marxist economist with Pace University. And the other panelists are going to be Radhika Desai of the Department of Political Science at the University of Manitoba, speaking on the dollar, U.S. currency, the world's problem. And Alan Freeman, also visiting research fellow from the University of Manitoba, speaking on how bad can it get, 1929 and all that. This is all going to be happening at 6 p.m. 1 week from tonight, Tuesday, April 14th at Pace University, up on the 18th floor conference room. That's One Pace Plaza, which is just east of City Hall. You know, all know where that is, just kind of like right in the shadow of the Brooklyn Bridge. The trick is that I've been informed that you need to register beforehand in order to get into the building. Now, how does one go about doing that? That's a very good question indeed. Let's see. How does one go about doing that? Checking my email here for the answer to this. Oh, yeah, here we go. It must be this one, entitled Addendum. Yes. Right. Okay, if you wish to attend, I assume it's all right for me to announce this on the radio. If you wish to attend, you've got to RSVP via email to Andrew Kleiman on or before April 10th. And please make sure that you bring photo ID. I suppose that's Andrew _ Kleiman, Kliman, at MSN.com. This is an awful lot of rigmarole to jump through to go to an event, I say, but I don't make the rules. Once again, if you want to go to the event, apparently you have to pre-register by email to Andrew _ Kleiman, Kliman, at MSN.com. My God, it sounds almost as complicated as getting into the WBAI building. Speaking of getting into the WBAI building, there's one more thing. I'm going to read a statement which is going around. Not because I endorse it, nor because I'm necessarily here to shoot it down, but merely because I'm as much in the dark as anybody else. So I'm going to merely read this and throw it out there for consideration and discussion. And then I'll have some annotation, if you will, or even if you won't, on what I've just read and on some other related things. And then perhaps that'll take us to just about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we'll take listener phone calls. So a lot of people are aware that WBAI is going through one of its perennial panics, that the sky is falling and we're all about to get kicked off the air. Well, you know, the thing about the Chicken Little routine is that, to mix my metaphors, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf, right? Chicken Little, you know, sometimes the sky really is falling, right? So I don't know. Maybe the sky is falling, you know? But then again, maybe it's just a propaganda ploy. In any event, I will read from a statement from the JUC, the Justice and Unity Coalition, I believe it stands for, which is going around, entitled, Whose Station? Our Station. Come to WBAI, tell Pacifica Interim Executive Director, no takeover. Tomorrow, Wednesday, April 8th, beginning at 8 a.m. That's very, very early in the morning. But apparently it's going to be going on right on into the afternoon. I don't quite understand what the schedule is. All right, let me read. All right, once again, they're asking those who are planning to attend to RSVP, if you can, at info@justiceunity.org. info@justiceunity.org. WBAI is at 120 Wall Street. We know that. Take the 234 J or M trains to Wall Street. Walk downhill past Water Street. The building is at the corner of South Street. Bring photo ID for building security. This Wednesday is an important day to mobilize for the struggle to maintain WBAI's local autonomy and oppose the planned lockdown of WBAI's transmitter. several things are coincidentally happening at different times, all of which you can participate in to make your voice heard about the station you cherish. Sometime that day, Grace Aaron, the Pacifica Interim Executive Director and Pacifica National Board Chair from Los Angeles, will arrive at the station with an entourage of three other staff, the illegally anointed Interim Chair Financial Officer LaVarne Williams from Berkeley, and two staff members from the L.A. station. Citing WBAI's financial crisis, Aaron claims they are on a mission, quote, to assess what is needed at the station, end quote, to roll up our sleeves, fix what needs fixing, wipe out any backlog, such as in mailing out premiums, repair equipment, enhance the website, and give a boost to WBAI, end quote. I don't know where these quotes come from. I don't know if they're from a document or from email or from a telephone conversation. They're not sourced, but they are in quotes in the leaflet I am reading, which has been posted to the notorious blue board or the good light board. Okay, so to continue from the text which I'm reading. But her recent stealth move to change the locks on WBAI's transmitter without notifying the WBAI general manager suggests another agenda is at work, her being Grace Aaron, the who exactly is Grace Aaron? Pacifica Interim Executive Director Grace Aaron. Her recent stealth move to change the locks on WBAI's transmitter without notifying the WBAI general manager suggests another agenda is at work, especially hard on the heels of the idea she put forth to put WBAI into internal receivership, quote-unquote, i.e. controlled by the Pacifica National Office. This is your station, and you have a right to come in and speak directly to the person claiming authority to dictate how it should be run. Please join us inside the station at 8 to 10 a.m. or 3 to 6 p.m. This is tomorrow, Wednesday. Insist on meeting with Aaron and Co. and share your views with them about Aaron's power grabs and about the vital importance of maintaining WBAI's 49-year history of independence and community accountability as a voice for peace and justice. Then from 7 to 9 p.m., also tomorrow, Wednesday, the LSB, which is the, oh God, I'm so terrible with these acronyms, the Listener Something Board Finance Committee holds its monthly public meeting to review the station's finances. Members of the public are allowed to participate in discussions. A motion will be offered to maintain WBAI's autonomy. Come and express your support. Finally, from 9 to 11 p.m., there will be a live on-air report to the listeners from the local station board. Both sides will be represented. Half the time of each hour, 9 to 10 and 10 to 11, is supposed to be for listener calls. Call in and voice your views or ask questions at 212-209-2900. Once again, that's 212-209-2900. Well, you don't have to wait until 9 p.m. tomorrow night, because in just about a half an hour, we're going to be doing exactly that right now, although you're not going to be having representatives from the local station board there. It isn't the listener something board. It's the local station board. Right, I knew that. It's just going to be me, Bill Weinberg, on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. That counts as a station break. I'll make it official. WBAI New York. To continue with the text which I'm reading, down to the last paragraph here. Meanwhile, continue to express your views to the Pacifica National Board by emailing them at pnb@pacifica.org. This reaches Grace Aaron and all members individually. Demand that WBAI's autonomy and local control of programming be maintained and protected! Exclamation point. Also call the Pacifica National Office in Berkeley at 510-849-2590 with the same message. Stay in touch with us for updates and check www.justiceunity.org or call 212-591-2111. Whose station? Our station! Exclamation mark. Once again. So, that's what's going around. Okay, now, I need to make clear that, once again, whenever I talk about this, I always need to say, and I mean this, in the utmost sincerity that I am not in either camp in the really horrific, brutal, ugly tug of war which has been going on over WBAI, which has really been utterly, utterly destructive to the true interest of the station ever since really the immediate aftermath of the coup. The coup period being when there was the illegitimate regime, which was in power with the connivance of the Pacifica National Board here between Christmas time of the year 2000 and just about this time of year, April, if memory serves, of 2002. So just a little bit over a year and change. Once again, you know, everybody kind of came together and buried the hatchet to oppose that illegitimate regime and succeeded, but then immediately fell out amongst themselves and have been, tearing the station apart, okay? And I, after avoiding going to the LSB, local station board meetings, for a long time because they were just ugly and stupid and pathetic, because everybody was just interested in promoting their own faction rather than promoting the interests of WBAI. And I figured, you know, they don't need an audience. An audience just encourages them if they want to act like fools. And I'm talking about the loudmouth, intransigent elements on both sides here, okay? I want to make that clear. After several years of avoiding the LSB meetings for this reason, you know, I've showed up recently at LSB meetings, and it's just been an abhorrent spectacle, okay? It's been an abhorrent spectacle to just witness. Here we are talking about the fact that the station is going deeper and deeper and deeper into the red. The station is getting closer and closer and closer to financial apocalypse. Obviously, something is not right when we have to keep on coming back and asking the listeners for their hard-earned money at increasingly frequent intervals and seem to be getting less and less of a return for doing so. Obviously, something is amiss here. And rather than addressing it, each side is just trying to score points for their own side and to paralyze the other side. And so, of course, nothing ever gets done, and the meetings just degenerate into shouting matches. I mean, it's like watching a kindergarten class when the teacher is out, you know, and one kid throws the chalk, and then it just deteriorates into a melee. That's what it's like, except it's adults. So, okay, now, all of that said, regarding what I just read here, okay, I understand, given the history, particularly the recent history, the obviously the coup period, when there really was an illegitimate, and I mean illegal, as ultimately was determined by the courts. It was an out-of-court settlement. They didn't actually lose, but they knew they were going to, which is why they settled. An illegal regime, which was put in power here, which did come in not at the transmitter at the Empire State Building, but here at the premises at 120 Wall Street, and changed the locks in the middle of the night. Given all of this history, I understand the need to, the imperative to jealously guard our turf and our autonomy here at WBAI. Okay? I do. But there's another hand. There is another hand. And the other hand is that, it's obvious that something is amiss here. And I'm not casting, let me make clear once again, I am not casting all of the blame for it in any one faction. Okay? I believe there's plenty of blame to go around. But something is amiss at WBAI. And the most obvious way in which something is amiss is, you know, once again, we have to keep on returning to the airwaves to ask the listeners for their money at more and more frequent intervals each year until it seems like we spend more time actually holding marathons than just doing ordinary programming that we're supposed to be doing, and spend more time, you know, taking out from actually producing our programs to, you know, say, call now, get your special premium, 212-209-29500. Thank God we don't have to do that tonight. Sorry. Almost, it's like flicking a switch in my brain. I just go on rote. I have to do it so many times a year. And then kind of adding insult to injury after, you know, sort of, I mean, it's something of an abuse of the listeners, frankly, when we have to do it so often. And I understand that it's an imperative we have to do it. You know, if we need the money, the most important thing is to stay on the air. But then adding insult to injury, we have arrived at this strategy or this modus operandi by which the premium that we offer is the star of the show when we're doing the marathons, when we're doing the fun drives, as we call them now. And everything is about the premium. And we do a real hard sell on the premium, and you've just got to get this great book. You've just got to get this great video. You've just got to get this great music compilation. Call now. That's what it's all about, is getting this, you know, highly overpriced, you know, $50, $75, $100 video or audio presentation or whatever. And some of the material is quite good, okay, mind you. Some of it I have pledged for myself because I also am a member and supporter of WBAI. Some of it is not so good, as you know. Some of it I've taken strong issue with, and we will actually get to that before my rant is over. We'll get back to that question before my rant is over. But in any event, the overall point which I'm trying to get to now is that, you know, then after making the premiums the big star of the show and making everything about, you know, doing a hard sell on the premium as the main strategy for raising money, then the premiums don't go out. Now, the premiums department has been overworked, overstretched, under-resourced, and there's been a big backlog, and they're struggling to get out of the backlog. Once again, I, because I feel that I have to, I have no choice ethically, even though it's a bit of a pain in the posterior, I take personal responsibility for making sure that every premium which my listeners pledge to goes out. Now, once again, if there's anybody out there who has pledged, not in the last thon, now what was it that we offered at the last thon again? I can't remember what it was. I think it was that book about the global financial crash, wasn't it? But because that was just a couple of months ago. But anybody who from one of the previous fun drives, I should say, not thons, we call them fun drives now. If you made a pledge for a premium on my radio show, on this radio show, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, more than, say, 4 months ago, and you have not received your premium, then I urge you to get in contact with me, and I will see that this is corrected, okay? And, in fact, many of you have, and I have done so. So I am fastidious about this, okay? I really am. Anybody who pledges for a premium on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade will receive their premium, even if I have to go back into the premiums department and actually, dig it out of the backlog and make sure that it gets taken care of, okay? But nonetheless, the problem exists. The problem exists. There is a big backlog in the premiums department, and we have been struggling for a long time now, for many, many months, we have been struggling to get out from under the backlog. And it really is fundamentally unfair to make, you know, the linchpin of the fund drives the premium, and to do a real hard sell on the premium, and then the premium doesn't get sent out in a timely manner, or I'm not going to say at all, because even you people who have been waiting many, 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 many months for your premiums, I would like to think you're going to get them eventually. So I'll just say not to send them out in a timely manner, okay, giving WBAI that benefit of the doubt. Okay, this is This is a fundamentally unacceptable situation. Okay, let's face it. It's a fundamentally unacceptable situation. And I'm not casting any fingers of blame here, okay? I understand that the entire world economy is in deep crisis. Obviously, the nonprofit sector is going to be in the deepest crisis of all. The sector which depends on the largesse of volunteers and people with disposable income is going to be in deeper crisis yet. So I'm not about pointing fingers of blame. I'm about acknowledging reality. So what all does this have to do with Grace Aaron coming out from California? Well, you know, Grace Aaron coming out from California, if they really did change the locks up at the transmitter at the Empire State Building, well, that immediately is going to recall that, first of all, what happened very, very recently, comparatively speaking, in, Christmas time of the year 2000, when the locks were changed in the middle of the night here at the studios at 120 Wall Street. It's also going to recall, for people with longer memories, the incident back in, I believe it was 78 or was it 79, one or the other, when there was another sort of struggle for control of WBAI and when producers who had been purged from the airwaves no longer had access to the control room, they actually took over the transmitter at the Empire State Building and did a little sit-in there. So obviously this is going to be perceived as, trying to lay the groundwork for a coup d'etat. So if they really did change the locks up at the transmitter, that's an egregiously bad tactical move, without a doubt, and raises some obvious hackles of paranoia, and is going to, bring back some very, very sour memories here at WBAI. All right, I make no equivocation about this, and in fact, it may have some ominous implications. It may, okay? I'm not in any position to say that it doesn't have ominous implications. It may well have ominous implications. But once again, there's another hand. And the other hand is that, to use a rather extreme political analogy, shall we say, it's kind of like the UN going into Darfur. Am I concerned with Sudan's national sovereignty? Yes, I am. Am I concerned with, hidden imperialist agendas behind United Nations intervention in Darfur? Yes, I am. But let's face the fact that there really is a mess in Darfur, okay? Maybe ultimately we should be more concerned with that. You get what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe we do need somebody at a minimum. Or what were the things which were mentioned in this statement? Roll up our sleeves, quoting from Grace Aaron, even though it's not attributed. It is in quotes, once again, in the statement from the JUC, Justice and Unity Coalition. Grace Aaron said that she and her delegation are coming here, quote, to roll up our sleeves, fix what needs fixing. All right, fix what needs fixing is rather broad and sweeping, so that could be ominous. Wipe out any backlog, such as in mailing out premiums. Repair equipment, enhance the website, and give a boost to WBAI. Okay, well, for starters, giving Grace the benefit of the doubt for the moment, maybe we should welcome somebody coming in here to help wipe out the backlogs in mailing out the premiums. Maybe we should say, thank you, Grace, please do. And maybe we should also add as an addendum, hands off the transmitter, Grace. Okay? So I kind of see both sides. I really do. Maybe we'll see what you, the listeners, have got to say about this in about 15 minutes at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. 1-800-259-2900 in about 15 minutes. But first, why don't we take another little musical break, shall we? Yeah, let's do that. Let's take another little musical break. If I got, let's see, which one? Okay, let's play cut two. Here's another one. This one is not going back 70 years. This one is only going back 25 years. So some of you aging hippies out there like me will remember it. But this one also gives me a real sense of the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Oh, the price of gold is rising out of sight, and the dollar is in sorry shape tonight. What the dollar used to get us now won't buy a head of lettuce. No, the economic forecast didn't write. But amidst the clouds, I spot a shining ray. I can even glimpse a new and better way. And I've devised a plan of action, worked it down to the last fraction. And I'm going into action here today. I am changing my name to Chrysler. I am going down to Washington, D.C. I will tell some power broker what they did. Iacocca will be perfectly acceptable to me. I am changing my name to Chrysler. I am heading for that great receiving line. So when they hand a million grand out, I'll be standing with my hand out. Yes, sir, I'll get mine. When my creditors are screaming for their dough, I'll be proud to tell them all where they can go. They won't have to scream and holler. They'll be paid to the last dollar, where the endless streams of money seem to flow. I'll be glad to tell them all what they can do. It's a matter of a simple form or two. It's not just remuneration, it's a liberal education. Ain't you kinda glad that I'm in debt to you? 'Cause I'm changing my name to Chrysler. I'm going down to Washington, D.C. I will tell some power broker what they did. I a broker will be perfectly acceptable to me. I'm changing my name to Chrysler. I'm headed for that great receiving line. So when they hand a million grand down, first amphibians crawled out of the slime. I love that line a whole lot. Even if Tom didn't write the rest of the song, it'd be worth it just for that line. Let's just do it again for me. You can sing along too. It's when the first, since the first amphibians crawled out of the slime of the slime. Goes like that. Since the first amphibians crawled out of the slime, we've been struggling in an unrelenting climb. We were hardly up and walking before money started talking. And it's sad that failure is an awful crime. Well, it's been that way for a millennium or two. But now it seems that there's a different point of view. If you're a corporate Titanic and your failure is gigantic, down in Congress there's a safety net for you. So I'm changing my name to Chrysler. I am going down to Washington, D.C. I will tell some power broker what they did. I am broker will be perfectly acceptable to me. I am changing my name to Chrysler. I am headed for that great receiving. So when they hand a million grand out, I'll be standing with my hand.
Arlo Guthrie, of course, covering Tom Paxton's I'm Changing My Name to Chrysler, a song from the early 1980s, from the Reagan recession and the last big corporate bailout. Boy, oh boy, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know what I'm saying? So, okay. Well, I've got a little bit more ranting to do, and then we'll take phone calls at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. And what I've got to rant about actually touches on both the global economic crisis and the situation here at WBAI, which is that my April Fool's prank last week succeeded far beyond my wildest dreams. And, you know, I thought that we had totally given it all away when at the beginning we were mentioning the secret CIA operation called Operation Sapphire, and we slipped up and accidentally called it Operation Satire. And we were struggling against getting the giggles in the studio, but we managed to, you couldn't see our smirks over the airwaves, but we did manage to suppress our giggles. And we pulled it off. Nobody noticed. And we took phone calls. We took 10 phone calls. I listened to the air check and I kept track. We took 10 phone calls. And the callers fell into the following categories. Of which I am calling reality police or killjoys, wise asses, dupes, sorry, and cranks. Not sorry. So what I mean, let me explain what I mean by these categories. The reality police or the killjoys are the ones who were onto us and just decided they were going to, like, you know, blow it and call us out and say it's an April Fool's prank. Well, gee, what fun is that? The next category of wise asses, that was actually the category I was rooting for. That's the category I wanted to be in the majority. The people who got it, but were sophisticated enough and had enough of a sense of humor to play along with the gag, and sort of, you know, fuel our fire and not call us out like killjoys. The next category were, with all due respect to you all, dupes. Or brunts, people who fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And then the last category is cranks, you know, the usual WBAI frequent caller cranks who want to just call in and talk about something completely unrelated or just want to do, you know, bogus Indian war whoops on the air or whatever their bizarre, arcane trip is. So we can just dismiss with the cranks altogether. There were two cranks. There were two wise asses. There was one reality cop. And five, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dupes. A full half of you, of the people who called in, now hopefully this is not representative of the listeners, but a full half of the people who called in fell for it hook, line, and sinker. They bought the whole thing. And, you know, this says a lot because, you know, obviously I was trying to make a point here. This wasn't just a random April Fool's prank. I was trying to make a point about the direction of too much programming at WBAI in recent years, and particularly about too many of the premiums which we offer during the fun drives here at WBAI in recent years. And obviously, you know, it was obviously a play on right-wing conspiracy theory. And instead of, you know, the usual Jewish conspiracy to, you know, bring down the world economy and seize control of the United States behind the scenes and blah, 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 blah. Instead, it was the sinister Swedish conspiracy. But essentially, it was the same thing. And it was all complete hokum. It was all just completely made up. It was all 100% unadulterated garbage, fiction, malarkey, fantasy, which me and my collaborator just made up out of thin air, and you all fell for it. All five of you, at least, fell for it. So this does not give me great faith in the intelligence of the listenership, unfortunately, I have to say. So, you know, this really, it makes me worry about the direction that WBAI is going, quite obviously. But this plays into a larger question of the direction that that the left is going, such as the left exists. Now, I used to say that, you know, the left doesn't exist anymore in this country, that the left is just, you know, a few people who all know each other in, you know, a few cities around the country, basically the cities with Pacifica stations, New York, Berkeley, Los Angeles, and a couple of other cities. And it's just, you know, it's a joke. It doesn't really exist. Well, now I'm not so sure. Now we're beginning to see, perhaps, the beginnings of a real, you know, resurgence of the left, actually rooted in working class struggles and so on, because as a function of the economic, cataclysm and the fact that, you know, the right, which has been utterly hegemonic and ascendant in this country since the Reagan Revolution, being largely discredited and in disarray. So I feel this is a real moment of historical opportunity. But there is also the distinct possibility yet that we are going to blow this moment of historical opportunity by playing into scapegoating and getting the analysis dead wrong. So if you notice two very, very, very ugly, unfortunate events which are in the news, the massacre up in Binghamton over the weekend, and then the cops that were killed by some other guy who just went off in Pittsburgh. And both of them, I think, are very telling, because apparently I believe it was Vietnamese immigrant who shot up the immigrants aid center in Binghamton felt humiliated as an immigrant, and this was apparently what inspired him. And, you know, it's very, very clear that there's been, you know, an awful lot of really evil scapegoating and, you know, all these horrific, you know, attacks that we've seen just here in the metropolitan area on immigrants, all part and parcel of, you know, all this paranoia about, you know, the border is going to be overrun by the Mexican hordes and we have to call out the army and blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, this is something which happens in economic hard times, right, is that, you know, immigrants get scapegoated. And then there was the guy out in Pittsburgh who was apparently, according to the article in today's New York Times, filled with all of the same kind of right-wing conspiracy talk, according to some blog post which he had done before this unfortunate escapade. All of this, exactly the same kind of right-wing conspiracy theory that we were lampooning on these airwaves last week, about how, you know, the country is secretly controlled by the Zionists and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you have to understand the historical function of anti-Semitism, you know, because the propaganda system, in order which maintains itself and which ultimately defines classical fascism, which is a mechanism for the capitalist system maintaining itself through periods of crisis. That's what fascism can be understood as. It always works. It's got two sets of scapegoats. It's got the scapegoats at the bottom of the social pyramid, who are, you know, the immigrants who are stealing your jobs, and the lumpen proletariat elements which are making the streets unsafe, and et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got the scapegoats at the top of the social pyramid, who are, you know, the hidden elites who are behind the scenes. So, you know, don't worry about your boss. Don't worry about the guy who owns the corporation that you work for. He's not the problem. It's those sinister elites in the shadows who control the banking system and have all got Jewish last names. They're the problem. So, once again, a mechanism by which the real elites, you know, ride out the crisis by scapegoating largely fictional elites. You know, whether it's the Bilderbergers or the Elders of Zion or the Secret Order of Svensson. So this raises the question of, you know, what is this new era that we're heading into? You know, I sort of feel like since the economic crash and the election of Obama, for better or worse, the page has been turned, right? And it's not whatever has been in power since the Reagan Revolution, and especially since Bush's pseudo-election in 2000 and 9/11 the next year. You know, the page has been turned now. And what the new era that we're heading into is remains uncertain and remains to be seen. Now, if we look at the – obviously, a lot has changed since the 1930s in this country and in the world. But nonetheless, by looking at that era, we can arrive at some useful analogies. And there were a few tendencies which were in play. I'm going to see if I can give this wrap in 5 minutes so that we can take phone calls for the remaining 25 minutes after that. I will say now that it is 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. The name of this show is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, for reasons too obscure to explain at the moment, and my name is Bill Weinberg. In the 1930s, there were, and on into the 1940s, as the great showdown with fascism immediately followed the Great Depression, there was fascism, obviously, was one response to the crisis. And fascism was rooted, as I just said, fundamentally on scapegoating, okay? On scapegoating the left and socialists and people at the bottom of the social pyramid and foreigners and immigrants, and also on scapegoating these conveniently hidden and for the most part fictional elites at the top of the social pyramid, so that the real elites, the people who actually run, who actually ran Central Europe and Italy and Spain and the rest of the world which succumbed to fascism in that period, they could ride out the storm and they could, you know, cut their deal with the militarized state and actually profit off of the chaos, as the Krupps and Farbens did with Hitler. So that was one response to the crisis of the 1930s. Opposed to that, particularly after 1941, there was the Popular Front, which basically was an alliance between socialists and worker struggles and labor struggles and what was perceived as being the more progressive sectors of the bourgeoisie in the West against fascism. And through an alliance of necessity in order to defeat fascism, attempting to pull the ruling elites in the Western democracies to the left and to get a better deal for the working class. That was another response to the crisis of the 1930s. Then there was the more hardcore sectors of the left which rejected the Popular Front, basically the anarchists, who had their moment of glory, which also proved to be their last gasp in Spain, and particularly in Catalonia, between 1936 and 1937. They were essentially in power there, and they actually had a functioning anarchist society. And their position was militantly anti-fascist, but also rejected the Popular Front as a sellout and as a charade, and had a position of complete intransigent opposition to both to the capitalist bloc and to the fascist bloc and to the communist bloc and the Comintern in Moscow. And believed, in no compromise with capitalism or with fascism or with state socialism. So what complicates it a little bit is that there was actually a fourth position, which didn't last long. Well, the anarchist position didn't last long either, obviously. Ultimately, it turned into a struggle between between the Popular Front and fascism. But just like there was the third position of the anarchists, who were essentially crushed in 1937 and disappeared from history for the most part, there was also, between the Hitler-Stalin Pact of September 1939 and the and Hitler's betrayal of the pact in the invasion of Russia, Operation Barbarossa, in June of 1941, between those years, there was a fourth position, which was the position of the Hitler-Stalin Pact, and what has variously been called the red-brown position, or meaning an alliance of the reds and the browns, meaning the brown shirts, fascism, Nazism, or sometimes called national Bolshevism when it's in pseudo-left garb. And the notion behind national Bolshevism is that there should be an alliance between fascism and Bolshevism against the capitalist West, and that there are, rather than supporting class struggle within every nation on earth, which was the position of Marx and Lenin, of course, that instead there are bourgeois nations and proletarian nations, and that Germany and Russia were proletarian nations and had to stand together against the bourgeois nations of the West. Now, this idea, as we say, you know, Hitler betrayed his buddy Joe Stalin in June of 1941, and that was the end of the Hitler-Stalin Pact. But this brand of politics has survived, unfortunately, and has been revived in recent years, particularly on the left in the United States, unfortunately, around outfits such as the Workers' World Party. I am not afraid to name names. So, you know, you get this notion that instead of supporting the workers who are standing up to their bosses in Iran and are, you know, going on strike and seizing control of the factories and so on, instead we have to support the bosses in Iran, because Iran is, you know, a proletarian nation which is standing up to the United States, and that we should be rallying around Iran and its right to, you know, the Iranian government, I should say, the Iranian state, and its right to you know, have nuclear weapons and so on. That's, you know, how do these things survive today? Well, you know, you could say that obviously in the left, such as it's reemerging, there is ordinarily you would see, you know, I would think that this national Bolshevist position would be so small as to be irrelevant and not even worth talking about, except that it's got a lot of followers here on the left in New York City, in particular at WBAI. And then, you know, you've got the Popular Front position, or the people who are willing to cut slack for Obama and for the left wing of the Democratic Party. From a national perspective, they make up a much, much, much larger segment of what we might broadly term the progressive forces in this country at the moment. Then there is, you know, right-wing conspiracy theory, which is, you know, fascism sort of coming in the back door, and has got this weird element of overlap with the, obviously, with the national Bolshevist position, if you will, of outfits such as Workers' World. And then finally, and unfortunately, last by a long shot, by several miles, is, you know, the real intransigent pure class struggle position represented by the anarchists, which once again have largely disappeared from history, even though, you know, they're the position which is closest to my heart, in my heart of hearts. You know, I sort of recognize that they aren't really a force to be reckoned with anymore. So, all right, instead of going on for 5 minutes, I've gone on for 10 minutes, which means that instead of 25 minutes of phone calls, we have time for 20 minutes of phone calls. So there we have it. These are, I mean, it's pretty obvious for questions which I'm putting to you out there. What is WBAI's future? What is really going on around here? What is the future more generally? A related question of what, you know, the some kind of resurgence of popular struggles and workers' struggles going to look like in this country as we appear to be, you know, continuing to be going into some kind of, you know, massive world-scale economic crisis here. Well, the board is full, so I don't have to articulate the questions anymore. Obviously, you all get it. Very good. Let's take 20 minutes of phone calls. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I was listening to your description, and I would like for you to answer a couple of questions for me.
I'll do my best.
Okay. First off, every position you play, you described in history, one factor holds true, that Jews played major roles in both all sides of those issues, as far as Bolsheviks, as far as fascists, and considering their small numbers, how do you explain that?
How do I explain that?
Well, from your historical perspective, the fact is that there is no getting around the fact...
Okay, I'm more interested in how you explain it. So
well, no, I can only update it by saying that I find it amazing that people can blame situations on blacks, like the savings and loans, the housing scandals, this and that. But if you look at the cast of characters that are bringing this nation down, there is an argument that can be made that the new gained wealth and acceptance of Jews they've not been able to cope with it. And that's because of their inability to accept power. They have purely existed on persecution complexes. It was only a few years ago that they were not even considered to be good enough to be president.
Or what's your point?
My point is that I noticed there's a new attitude among Jews where they refuse to acknowledge that they're a minority anymore. They're now white. When it was advantageous, they glommed on to black causes and said that they were...
Okay, I'm not getting a point. Give me a point.
Point is, is it possible for Judaism... Not Judaism, some Jews, let me be realistic. Some Jews to accept the fact that America's been damn good to them and that they no longer need to bring it down?
What makes you think that some Jews are trying to bring down America?
Well, it's because the insecurity historically never allowed them to feel at home anywhere.
All right, so they're trying to bring down America.
Well, no, it's a matter of... Well, look at the names in the cast of characters.
Okay, well, this is somebody who buys the fascist analysis heard from. Okay, one vote for fascism. WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, great show.
Thank you.
Okay, if I can make a couple. The first one about your, I could understand your frustration. Every time BAI go, I'd like to have a little dialogue. Every time BAI goes on the air with these horrendous begging for money, and you guys have to do these premiums and somehow sell this idea that we're so poor, and it's just so depressing. And yet, you know, again, whose decision was it to move down to Wall Street? What was really wrong with that place on 8th Avenue? It was near Penn Station. It seemed like it was adequate.
I liked it better, but apparently the decision to move down here, I liked 505 8th Avenue better, but the decision to move down here was made by Pacifica, not by WBAI, to my understanding. It was handed to us as a fait accompli from above.
Right. Okay. One of the things I was curious, though, how did your whole show, the name of your show is why did you pick that?
What, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade?
Yes.
I inherited it from the founder of the show, Peter Lamborn Wilson. So I didn't come up with the name, actually, although I feel like I've sort of grown into it. But Peter Lamborn Wilson has written a lot, including under pseudonyms, about the convergence of anarchism and heretical Islamic mysticism. So it has to do with that. That's the short answer.
But when we talk about capitalism, I mean, in pure capitalism, like we had in this country, slavery was a business, and this was a commodity, and they didn't care if it was a human being. The idea of capitalism, where China is in Darfur, we owe China a huge amount of money. There's no way that we could start talking about morality. Even Dr. King said this: black people could go to a coffee shop, but if you don't have the money in your pocket to eat, I mean, that's the real issue. Racism.
Okay, so?
And the idea of a green, racist attitude or people who don't have money don't count no matter what their color is, that's discrimination. How could we ever as human beings get beyond this? I mean, there is... Yes, there is problems.
Are you making a point? Or are you asking a question? I'm not quite getting where you're going with
this. I'm framing it in an overall statement. I mean, you sound like you have a very intelligent show. I like your show. I have to ask you this because you have mocked this. What was the deal with all of the loose change? And what is this? They proved this on the History Channel why one of those buildings collapsed. I mean, I hate to go into this, but. What was that all about, and whose decision was that loose change was this great thing?
Well, look, I was I was taking pot shots at exactly that kind of thinking in my April Fool's prank last week, so you know what I think about that. I'm going to move on to another call and see if we can squeeze in some
of those. Answer some of those. Can you answer any of those?
Well, I didn't hear a clearly articulated question.
The question of, like, when you say capitalism and what happened with fascism and stuff.
Yeah.
As bad as we think the Nazis are with the idea of what they had with the super race, well, we love celebrities. We love fascinating, beautiful people. We don't care about poor people. I mean,
who is we? Who is we?
We as an American society really do create a lot of suffering. And you know, now that we're suffering, that's nothing. I mean, one person that killed 13 people, that's happening every day in Afghanistan and Iraq. Who is a terrorist? The President of the United States, we're not at war.
Well, see, you keep using this pronoun we as if the United States was, you know, some monolithic entity which includes me and you and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the heads of General Motors, okay? I don't buy that. I support class struggle within the United States and within Iran and North Korea and Afghanistan and every other country on earth. So I hope that answers your question. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio and speak up. Turn down your radio and speak up. We're wasting time.
Hi.
Well,
I would say, I would sort of disagree with that what you would term the anarchist left is irrelevant. I mean, not in New York City. I mean, I think some of the most vibrant, especially in the youth, are those who identify with the ahroba, right? The anti-authoritarian.
What's this word you're using?
Well, the arroba is the at symbol.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, my thing is, I think people, we need to move away from...
The sort of postmodern take on the anarchist symbol, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we should move away from certain terms that have, you know, which are all tainted by history and obviously are sometimes, you know, people, for their benefit, like to keep them stuck in the past. I mean, I think to me, the most fundamental... aspect of anarchy, which is why I, like you, in my heart of hearts, identify with it, is that it's democratic.
Yes, radically democratic, as opposed to, you know, bureaucratized or bourgeois democracy.
Or representative or centralized democracy is like just about every government is. So, I mean, I think democracy is the most vibrant movement in the...
I felt a big surge of hope, you know, following basically between the Zapatista revolt in Chiapas in 94 through 9/11 when everything got all messed up in the world. I felt that, you know, there was something really happening in the anti-globalization movement that began with Seattle in 99. And I sort of felt like there actually was some kind of reemergence of a real serious militant left with an anarchist spirit. But I feel like it's kind of been lost in recent years. Maybe we can get it back. But I feel like since 9/11, it just kind of got lost. It's still lost from
a lot of them. Like definitely at BAI.
It is very little voice at BAI. Yeah,
BAI has become very sickening. I mean, you know, it's been part of my whole, like, you know, political sort of awakening since about 2001. And I mean, when I listen to BAI nowadays, most of the time it's sickening how they support the Democrats and Obama. I mean,
not all of them.
Way too much. Mm.
Anyway, well, you know, I mean, again, if I felt that there was more of, and people have accused me of being too soft on Obama, and I have to acknowledge that, You know, I mean, in spite of my skepticism and my traditional very deep antipathy to the Democratic Party, I felt a tremendous sense of relief with his election that the other guys didn't win, because I really felt that the other guys had won, we would have been, you know, going over the edge into something like fascism. Really.
It is the lesser of two evils, and, you know, but better isn't always good, right?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I'll admit that I frankly feel torn between, barring a resurgence of a sort of an anarchist left, such as we saw with the anti-globalization movement and the Zapatistas and all that, between that and, barring a resurgence of that kind of thing, between a more popular front position. I acknowledge maybe I'm getting soft in my old age, or maybe, you know, my expectations have just been dumbed down by, you know, living under Reaganism for my entire adult life until just now. But I acknowledge I feel torn at the moment. I do.
Well, I mean, you know, I was born in '80, so I don't have the same.
Oh, well, there you go.
But definitely, I see that.
That was the year. '80 was the year that everything got.
The
Reagan was elected, and the whole, you know, revolution, right wing revolution in this country took place.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, and I was obviously, you know, masked by all that stuff. The wool was over my eyes for all these years. But I think there's so much going on nowadays in New York City, in the whole world, and most people are asking for at least a little bit more democracy. But there's a lot of people asking for radical democracy. There's very little faith in those.
All right. Well, listen. You know, we're attuned. We are attuned to signs of this kind of thing. So, if you have any encouraging tips for us, be in touch. Thanks for your call. We're going to see if we can squeeze in a few more in the 10 minutes remaining to us. WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air. You're on the air.
You mentioned about the two elites. You mentioned about an elite. Two different things. You said one is that some people with the illegal aliens taking their jobs, and you mentioned something about a Bilderberger group and the elite. I'm responding to what you were saying earlier.
Yeah,
right. Well, actually, I'll tell you something, and I know this for a fact. Actually, it's both. This third world crap coming in here.
Okay, another vote for fascism. We have two unabashed votes for fascism so far. WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you mention the names of some of these intransigent forces on the local station board of both whatever sides of the spectrum?
Well, obviously, it's the JUC, and I think they're calling themselves the ACE now. You know who they are. If you don't know who they are, you're not paying attention. Pay close attention.
JUC and the ACE.
The JUC and the ACE. If you don't know who the key personalities are, then all I can say is...
Well,
pay close attention. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I have a suggestion about how we can resolve some of BAI's economic woes.
Well, please share it.
Well, I think there needs to be... I've been listening for many years, by the way. I've also donated, you know, quite a bit of money. I can't remember all the premiums I've gotten over the years. Yeah, but I'm thinking there should be some more community involvement. I mean, there should be get-togethers, you know, functions where the community can come together, see some of these people they hear on the air, and participate. Even marches, you know, some kind of thing that.
Well, come on in and come on in and organize it.
That would be allowed.
Of course.
Really.
Of course.
But I think there is some sort of a disconnect. The closest people get to the station is to make calls, you know, like
well, that's
I'm
a start.
Doing now.
That's a start.
Yeah.
Well,
but,
come on down during the fun drive and staff the phones, and then you'll actually be on the premises, and you'll get to meet us, and you can knock ideas around, and you'll see that people are. I mean, if we can ever get past this state of, you know, factionalized paralysis, then there should be more space for listener involvement and breaking down, you know, this rigid barrier between producer and listener. I'm all for it. I'd love to see it. Come on down and answer phones during the next fun drive and say hello. Meet me in the flesh and we'll kick things around. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio and speak up.
Hello. You're about the second person doing a show that I heard actually come from a different side than I've been hearing on the morning talking about the money problem. And on another show, I heard that maybe from, you could say, 500,000 to as high as maybe 800 or more, there was a deficit at the station. And this was not spoken about in the morning, so I was sort of really interested in, I didn't know how to do it, but I was interested in ideas that would, I was trying to find out what are the ideas that will solve that type of deficit, share of just selling.
That's what we're all trying to figure out.
Okay.
That's exactly what we're all trying to figure out.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
All right. Thank you. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes.
Turn down your radio.
Yes, it's down. Listen, your analysis of who was on target and off, the point being the first caller claimed it was a hoax as clear as day. And you sort of moved.
Yes, I acknowledge there was one killjoy or reality cop. Everybody else was either playing along or was fell for it or else was just a mere crank. WBAI, you're on the air. Well, there you go. Speaking of cranks, speak of the devil. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air. Speak up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Another smooth opening, Jew boy.
Okay, our third fascist of the night. We're doing great. WBAI, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Bill. About money raising.
Turn down your radio, please.
I'll kill it. Hold on a sec.
Yeah.
All right. About money raising, there's the good search idea. BAI has been a member for over a year, and you got maybe $100 last year. It's a way for people who don't have funds to use the internet. You're doing searches, just the regular searches, usually called Google searches, in which the station can earn money. There is, because if the station was earning $5 million a year, $1 million a quarter, this wouldn't be even a discussion. You all could be slaughtering each other in the streets and Pacifica wouldn't be marching in. If the idea about getting out into the streets to commiserate more with the public, there have been some events. However, I'm not clear how user friendly they are. And what might be interesting is if each producer would reach out to its his constituency to do what's comfortable for them. In order to make the station more well known, I had an idea at one point, and I did organize it to some extent, of getting high school students to do flyers in the various train stations. My thought here is to A, get myself mentally more fit so I could come in and man the phones, but more important than that, get the money that's available. Unfortunately, the audience I don't believe is the source of where the capital is going to come from in order to A, wipe out the debt and keep the station going.
Well, we're supposed to be listener supported radio. If not the audience, then who?
When I say the audience, I'm talking about the mass of the audience who is experiencing the same kind of economic trauma that the station is.
Well, yes, I know. It's a serious dilemma, but I don't see that there's any possibilities out there other than depending on the listeners one way or the other.
What I'm suggesting is that the station does have a history of quote-unquote star value that needs to be mined in some fashion. Perhaps bring back the names aren't coming as quickly as I think, because I'm thinking of John Goodman and Richard Belcher and people.
Wow, you are an old timer.
Well, listen, do what you can with the brain that I'm working with. But there are other people who have gone to the station, who do promos for the station, who respect the work of the station, who need to understand that the crisis of Danny Glover was up there a couple of times and stuff like that. We need to invigorate some of the other movement, you need a little star power, because this is America, and that's what folks will follow most quickly, and then you pump the politics.
Okay.
I know.
I got to be off the air. I'm sorry. Time's up.
Tom Whisker. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. I wish we could keep going with phone calls because the board is full. I'll tell you what. Maybe we'll continue this conversation next week. So everybody who's calling now, hold your thought and call back exactly 1 week from tonight on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, where it will be, if we're still on the air, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade with me, Bill Weinberg, getting myself deeper and deeper into trouble with each broadcast. Please do stay tuned for Weaponry with Tom Whisker coming up next, and we're going to go out